welcome back to this Wednesday edition of the Hagman and Hagman Report. We are joined this hour by, and next hour, by Chris Pinto, filmmaker, radio show host, and much more, investigator. We're going to be talking about his film Dark Clouds Over Elberton, as well as several other projects he's worked on and working on, including the latest DVD you can pre-order, Bridge to Babylon.
It's incredible stuff. You know, ladies and gentlemen, we had talked, Joe and I were talking earlier, I guess we had talked about a month ago about the Georgia Guidestones, and I was surprised by how many people did not know of their existence I was surprised about the misconceptions related to the Georgia Guidestones. That's kind of what compelled me to do some research on the internet, and I came across a gentleman by the name of Chris Pinto, and he's the head of Adullam Films, adullamfilms.com. All right, so this is how it all started. And I got on the phone to Steve Quayle. I said, Steve, you and I have spoken about the Georgia Guidestones. This is my conversation with Steve Quayle. He said, yeah. I said, what do you think about Chris Pinto's work? He said, oh man, great guy. You've got to get him on the show. I said, okay. But before he did, I ordered the DVD, got the DVD in, and Eric, the tech, Joe, and I, we sat and we watched it. And, you know, there's some hokey DVDs, hokey documentaries out there to me. I've watched my share of documentaries, and really there are some pretty, pretty hokey ones. But this one held my attention. Now, having been an investigator in the private sector for 30 years and dealing with a lot of criminal matters as well as civil matters and trying to get to the truth of a matter, it's both an art and a science. And Chris Pinto combines both in this DVD. I was, not too many things hold my attention when it comes to documentaries, but this did. there was not a lot of fluff in it. There wasn't fluff in it at all, I guess is what I'm trying to say. And, but the most important thing here I'm trying to say is, number one, Chris Pinto to me is, I mean, I would hire him as an investigator, or I would be gladly work with him as an investigator. I believe he's got the investigative qualities and traits of any of the investigators I've worked with on the federal, state, and local level. I was very wary about, for example, you know, looking at things with, you hear so much, you talk, well, you know, the Georgia Guidestones, R.C. Christian, that's, Ted Turner's deal. You hear about that, and you can go on and look at Wikipedia and say, oh, well, Wikipedia says this or that about the Guidestones. Well, yeah, no. You want to know the truth about the Georgia Guidestones? Pick up Dark Clouds Over Elberton. Go to order from adullamfilms.com, Dark Clouds. Just, you'll see it there. It's well worth the $24.95, I believe it is. Well worth it. And the backstory, simply put, I remember this. I remember this as an adult back in the late 70s, where this monument was erected, and it got some press, and I'm thinking, what the heck's that all about? But I blew it off, and, you know, because you're not awake. And then, but as we've gone through everything now, we see where, okay, so a lot of this stuff is in progress, in motion, and it's accelerating. And I'm talking about the 10 commandments, or I hesitate to use the word commandments, but the 10 laws, or whatever you want to call them, on the Georgia Guidestones. So then the obvious question is, as an investigator, well, who is behind it? And Dark Clouds Over Elberton, that DVD, gave me pretty much everything I needed to know about who's behind it, why. And I was surprised, because a lot of misconceptions that I had were removed by this documentary, and that went the same. I'm not going to put words in their mouths, but for Eric and for Joe, and they said, wow, man, okay, now I understand. And that's the gift that Chris Pinto has, the gift of merging art and investigation, or entertainment and investigation. I mean, so investigation is both an art and a science, and he's accomplished both. Mr. Pinto, welcome to the program, sir.
Good to be here with you guys. Really good to be here. It's good to talk to you again.
Yes, yes. We had a great conversation off air and learned a lot about you. And you know, you talk about a man of integrity and character and a knowledgeable guy. That's Chris Pinto. But Chris, why don't you introduce yourself to our audience? You could do a better job of telling our audience who you are than I could probably. So, and how you got started in all of this. And you know, where
Well, when I was younger, I went to college at a place called the North Carolina School of the Arts, and I studied acting. And I got into acting, writing, directing when I was a young guy, and pursued that and then independent filmmaking. And then I became a born-again believer when I was 30 years old and was living in New York. And I got saved, came to know the Lord, and that changed my life. I gave up my worldly ambitions for Hollywood and this kind of thing, and then set about trying to figure out what the Lord wanted me to do and whether or not I should even be involved in the entertainment industry. And then one step at a time was led into, well, like you were talking about, doing investigative work. I just became very interested in Bible prophecy and world events, things happening in the world around us, and really felt led to pay more and more attention to them and to compare them with what we find in the Scripture, and was deeply impacted by a film years ago, a documentary called Rock and Roll Sorcerers of the New Age Revolution, by a guy named, who became a very dear friend of mine and a brother, named Pastor Joe Schimmel. And I saw his film, and he was talking about things like the New Age movement and this New World Order and globalism and stuff like that, things that I'd never heard of before. Now, this is years and years ago. And so I started investigating them, and you know, the thing that really impressed me about his presentation is he spent so much time talking about the Bible and prophecy and really tying in what the Scripture says and saying, well, these things are happening in the world right now, all around you. You know, they're going on not only in the entertainment industry. He was focusing on the music industry, but he said they're also happening politically, happening theologically, with churches, etc. And so it was really eye-opening and very powerful. But that kind of began my own investigation into things like the Georgia Guidestones and the globalist movement and this thing they call the New World Order, and what was all of that about. And then I started making documentaries based on the research. And the first documentary I did was called Megiddo, The March to Armageddon, Bible Prophecy and the New World Order. And then I did a follow-up called Megiddo 2. And then partnered up with another ministry, and we did a three-part series on the history of America called Secret Mysteries of America's Beginnings, where we investigated a lot of the pagan influences in the history of America that really kind of shows how our country went from being a country that professed Christianity pretty strongly back at the 13 colonies, but then through the influence of these occult groups, one step at a time, developed what we today call New Age ideas about God and theology, etc. But we show kind of the origins of where all of these things began. And so eventually that kind of brought me into, you know, the research that that we did on the Georgia Guidestones. I remember, you know, in fact, I did a little vignette on the Guidestones in my film Megiddo 2, The New Age. I'd gone there and filmed it briefly, and we talk about it for maybe 10 minutes, pretty brief, just give an overview of the mysterious stranger who called himself R.C. Christian, who erected this monument and had these 10 commands or 10 guides on there. And then the first command says, maintain a world population below 500 million people, and that this has to do with population control, which is a big, you know, it's a very important aspect that you find over and over again in terms of this globalist agenda. And when you study communism and socialism, as I'm sure you guys know, there's a reason why the communists built so many gulags and were killing millions of people. There's a reason why Hitler and his National Socialist Movement built so many concentration camps and killed millions of people. depopulation and population control are very important tenets and aspects of this globalist movement. And it's a philosophy, it's a worldview. It's this idea that there are too many people on the earth, that the real problem of man is other men, other people. And, of course, part of the research that we did in Megiddo 2 and elsewhere has to do with Darwin and Darwinism and the whole, you know, the Darwinian connection with Hitler and the Nazis. But I think that plays, as we show in Dark Clouds Over Elberton, by the time we get to the end of it, you see the Darwinian connection. And what I usually do is I point people to the full title of Darwin's book, which I think is very telling. His book, Origin of the Species by Means of Natural Selection or the Preservation of Favored Races in the Struggle for Life. And this appears to be where Hitler got his idea for his book, Mein Kampf, My Struggle. His struggle was the preservation of the favored race, the Aryan race, against the lower races. And so this all feeds into population control. When they're choosing who it is that's going to be preserved and supported versus those who need to be diminished, it has very much to do with this idea that there are higher and lower races of humanity. And one of the chilling quotes from Darwin, if you study his writings, is that the higher races of man would eventually destroy the lower races of man and hence create a greater gap between man and his ancient ancestor, the ape. I remember stumbling upon that quote and thought it was pretty powerful because it seems to have been exactly what the Nazis were trying to do. You know, when Hitler would make reference to... Go ahead.
No, you know, I'm just amazed at the foundations of what we're looking at as what is termed the New World Order. It amazes me every time I turn around. When you get deep into the research as you're talking, you find connections to Darwin. You find connections to the to evolution, and at the nexus, you know, this Nazi occult type activity seems to be at the nexus of all of this. Or at least propelling the ideological bent or bias of this. So, I mean, and you really, really point this. I mean, you do a good job in laying this all out. I didn't mean to interrupt your flow of thought, but I just wanted to reaffirm that.
Oh, no, not at all. I mean, you know, so much of what's going on, as you know, is can be traced to the philosophies that were put forth with Nazism. I remember talking to years ago when I was working on another documentary called The Kinsey Syndrome, and when I interviewed Dr. Judith Reisman, who was formerly with the Department of Justice, and interestingly, a personal friend of Judge Scalia before he passed away here recently. And I was talking to Dr. Reisman, and she'd spent years studying all these things and had served with the OJJDP, the Juvenile Division of the DOJ, back during the Reagan administration. But she was talking about Nazi Germany, and she said people didn't just wake up one day and decide to go and kill 6 million Jewish people, because the average person is not going to do that. She said these people were indoctrinated. They were brainwashed systematically for years before all of this happened. And then, you know, we spent a lot of time talking about the propaganda and, you know, how, you know, the Nazi education with the kids and everything else, and that they were all prepared. And when I think about that, you look at what's going on in our country today with our colleges and universities. When people go to speak, if they hold to certain conservative views and this kind of thing, these young people will flip out on them and just get into a frenzy and just drive them off the stage and insist that they be kicked out of the university. As many people have noted, our young people in this country are being indoctrinated. They're being brainwashed. And it's very similar. Whenever I see these stories, it reminds me of the research that I've done in Nazi Germany and so on. And my grandfather on my mother's side fought during World War II, and he was actually from Poland originally. He was an adopted grandfather, not my biological grandfather, who died before I was born. But my adopted grandfather, his name is Zygmunt Zadarowski, and he was a Polish lieutenant during the war. But at one point, he was captured by the communists, by the Soviet Union, before they changed sides in the war. And he talked about being put through reconditioning, like they would send him to classes and this kind of thing, and try to get him to think differently, to embrace communism. And that brainwashing was a big part of what they did, trying to re-educate people. And he thankfully eventually was set free and went and joined the Allies eventually and fought through the end of the war. And, of course, spent the rest of his life talking about the war over and over again. But he always warned, he was repeatedly compelled to try and join the Communist Party, he said, but he wouldn't do it because his father hated communists. Hated communists, said if he joined the Communist Party, he could never look his father in the face again. And so he wouldn't do it.
Man.
But he told stories about the deceptions and the treachery that they were guilty of. But a lot of it, you know, I think goes back to the brainwashing and the indoctrination. When part of how I learned about the Darwinian connection here was watching documentaries when I was doing research that were made shortly after World War II had ended. And in those documentaries, they still talked about things like the gas, the Zyklon B gas that they used in the gas chambers was a pesticide that was used in factories and warehouses to kill bugs. And shortly after the war, it was well known that this was a Nazi expression of how they viewed the Jews. They argued that the Jews were subhuman, they had not fully evolved, that they had discovered the Jew gene, proving the Jews were not fully human and evolved and this kind of thing, and that this was used as a justification for mistreating them. And that the Zyklon B was like they were just getting rid of pests. They were getting rid of termites. In fact, there's a quote from Heinrich Himmler where Himmler had said that getting rid of the Jews was not a matter of conscience. It was like being deloused, just getting rid of lice, you know, and that they really weren't fully evolved, fully developed. Now, I personally think that they're using the same philosophy to justify the abortion industry in our country today, because that's the argument, that unborn children are not fully evolved. So, therefore, supposedly it's not murder to kill an unborn child. But yeah, I think what you pointed out, I mean, this has been the thing in so much of the research involving the globalists and this whole philosophy and this whole worldview. So much of it goes back to what happened in Germany in the 1930s and 40s. And, of course, after the war, then you had Operation Paperclip. You had the transfer of tens of thousands of Nazi war criminals out of Europe by our own OSS, the Office of Strategic Services. And there are those who have speculated that many of these Nazis came to work in America, and that within 20 years or so, we began to see things like Darwin, arguments for abortion, many of the same ideas began to take hold in our country. And I've often wondered if those who were involved in the OSS had taken a stronger stand against Nazism in terms of just shunning all of those guys, if that would have prevented so many of these socialist ideas from taking hold in America. But I still don't know. I still speculate on it.
That's definitely something to ponder. And I have to say that, you know, that in some manner or form, I consider that as well. You know, what if And what if the plans back then were made known to the people? But you know, we're so far down this path today that it seems as if we've got this inability. You know, I don't even know how to describe it. But when you study the roots, as you had just provided this excellent overview, going back into, well, World War II and the Nazi aspect of things, and I get emails all the time, people saying, "Oh, you know, here you go talking about Nazism again." But man, you know, it's like so prevalent in the political and social ideology that we have today in the West, and in particular in America. It's just it's stunning for me just to see this, and you really point this out. Let me ask you a question, kind of sidetracking a little bit here. Do you see any, and I'm not, I don't want to put you in a corner here at all. Do you see any parallels between where we are today as a country with pre-war Germany of the 30s, we'll say?
Oh, yeah, based upon what, and I mean, I'm not a big expert on pre-war Germany in the 30s, but there's a lot of, from what I know of what was going on there with, well, it is said that during that time you had the rise of these militant homosexual groups that rose up, and that they were very, very, very dogmatic, especially in Germany. It was said in the 1930s and 40s that homosexuality was Germany's national vice, and that the homosexuals formed the inner core of what would become the Nazi Party. I've read that on and off for years. And, sure. Of course, seeing the increasingly fascist, militant homosexual movement in our country, this is, in fact, partly the subject of one of our films called The Kinsey Syndrome, because a lot of this can be traced back to Alfred Kinsey, who was doing all the prep work for his Kinsey reports, which is ultimately what unleashed the sexual revolution here in America. And it also started the gay rights movement and all of this transgender stuff that we're dealing with today. You can trace all of that back to Kinsey in the 1940s and 50s when he did his two books.
What a sick puppy he was. Boy,
oh, yeah.
Man, I'll tell you, you know, and he's deified by modern, in cases of modern psychiatry, but also deified by, you know, the guy was a pedophile. Among a pervert, I should say alleged, I don't know. At least he writes or has written papers, and I've got his books about him. This is intensely insane, Kinsey, and his position that he played, the role that he played into today's modern homosexual movement. And how in the world could three and a half percent of a population of a country take over, hold hostage the majority of the other 96.5%, or 96%, or even 95%, if you want to give them the benefit of the doubt. How can such a small percentage change laws, change the definition of what the Bible has defined, and be so successful at it? I mean, I guess I'm going off on a tangent there, but I had to get my two cents in there since you mentioned Kinsey, and every time I hear Kinsey's name, I kind of twitch.
Well, with good reason, because Kinsey, you can trace so many of the problems we're dealing with right now back to Kinsey, with all these sexual orientation laws, et cetera. But yeah, how they have, I think what they've done is they have just spent decades specifically seeking out places of political power and influence in the system, and there's an interesting, in the first part of our film, we talk about the book Foundations, Their Power and Influence by Rene Wurmser. It's a great book. Great book that I think all Americans should read if they haven't read it already. It has to do with the Rees Committee, which was the congressional committee in the 1950s, headed by Congressman B. Carroll Rees. And Congressman Rees and his committee who discovered that there was this movement involving the Rockefeller Foundation, the Ford Foundation, the Guggenheim, and the Carnegie Endowment, and they were all working in concert together to subvert the education system, to specifically get us away from our Judeo-Christian foundation and toward a more globalist Marxist worldview. They developed things like postmodernism, which is not an accident. They specifically sowed that into the schools. And Wormser, when he's writing in this book, he talks about all that the committee was learning about this, really a plan to turn us into a communist country. But they had to do it slowly and systematically. But at one point, he talks about how one of the leading members of Congress, I can't remember the guy's name, one of the leading members of Congress was inquiring about their research. And part of this research led to Alfred Kinsey, because Kinsey was financed by Rockefeller. And this guy, this committee chairman, can't remember his name, but he called into the office the guys that were on this Reese committee doing the investigation, and he said, I need you to give me all of the files on Alfred Kinsey, all of them. And then they protested, and they said, you know, well, we don't know if we want to give you those files. And apparently, the way that Wormser writes in the book, he says the guy got so angry and so furious, he said he was going to go shut down their entire investigation, defund the entire thing, if they didn't give him the information they had on Alfred Kinsey and turn it all over to him at once. And they reluctantly agreed to do it. And so nobody knows what was in those files. But
wow.
My suspicion is that there were people who were involved in all kinds of sexual perversions who had, by that point, they had power in the government, and they didn't want anybody to know about it. And this guy was trying to cover it up. But I think they have been moving, they've been manipulating things one step at a time from that point to the present day. I mean, there is evidence. You have psychiatric groups back in the 1950s and 60s that were promoting things like pedophilia.
Sure.
And, you know, and Kinsey, of course, worked with pedophiles. This is one of the things we talk about in our film, where he hired some of these guys and paid them money and then documented all of this research. And the research that he documented becomes the foundation for sex education in America. That's the shocking part that most people don't know. And I remember when I first learned about this, I was interviewing Dr. Reisman on a different topic, but having to do with the moral decline of America. And she was talking about all this stuff. And she had been with the Department of Justice and so on, so of course that's why we're talking to her. But as I'm listening to her, I'm thinking, this can't be right. I mean, the first time I heard some of this stuff, I thought, oh my gosh, we can't use this. This sounds crazy. And then I spent about 3.5 years researching the things that she told us about, and come to find out, yeah, of course, she's, you know, much of what she said, well, really, I didn't find anything that she said that was incorrect. And it's just remarkable how, especially from then to now, because we released that film back in 2008, from 2008 to 2016, the advance of this movement has been so rapid. And it's almost like nobody has the power, or so it seems, to put a stop to it. And so wow. And looking at what's happened with the gay marriage issue, when you had the president, Bill Clinton, signs the Defense of Marriage Act, you have these state legislators that all pass a ban on gay marriage across the country, and then the American people vote in some 30 states and they all vote against gay marriage, but none of it matters. It's all swept off the table by the Supreme Court, and they push it into the system. And it goes back to what you're saying. How did they get this power? How did they get this power? I think that's still...
Okay, yeah, that's exactly. I mean, and therein lies the rub. Eric, do you mind just sending a text to my wife and having her make sure we order for the office the Kinsey syndrome? I mean, look, we need this, and in fact, we should do that right away. In fact, you know what? You've got a package. Do you have a package deal on your website? You do, don't you?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
DVDs. All right. So you can. Because my wife's at home and listening to the broadcast. Well, you know, she's like, so honey, take advantage of this. And I'm being very serious because, you know, we started out thinking about the Georgia Guidestones, but really the basis of what we see, you know, for this monument, I mean, this goes back so far in the ideology of these perverted globalists and really with a Luciferian agenda. I mean... And how polluted, and the Rees Committee, oh my goodness, folks, you want a good laugh. Just look at some of the websites in defense of the Rees, or in opposition of the Rees Committee, talking about, you know, what a scam. Comparing it to basically, the McCarthy hearings and conflating the McCarthy hearings with the House Un-American Activities, and, you know, people don't get to the fact that McCarthy was a senator and the House Un-American Activities Committee was the House, and they conflate the two, and they have no idea what they're talking about. So, it's nice to talk with you. And our guest tonight is Chris Pinto. His website, adullamfilms.com. Unless, is that the website we should direct people to, adullamfilms.com?
Yeah, we have two sites. We have adullamfilms.com, Think the Cave, Adullam, from 1 Samuel chapter 22. Where David fled when he was being persecuted. So at adullamfilms.com, and then we have our radio website, which is at noiseofthunderradio.com, and that's where we do our podcast radio show. Okay. But yeah, you can find our stuff here. If you go to adullamfilms.com, you can watch previews of most all of our documentaries.
And for those listening or watching, yeah, and Chris, for those watching on YouTube Live right now, and on the archive, you will see, ladies and gentlemen, the previews of, for example, Dark Clouds Over Elberton, and other parts of Adullam Film, public part of adullamfilms.com. So, I mean, this is just amazing. I never expected the breadth of this. I mean, talking about this, the breadth of this agenda and how all of this intricately fits together. So, you know, Kinsey, just to go back a little bit, Kinsey, the educational system, the various 501c3 corporations or companies, that entities that have been embroiled into this Darwinianism and the perversity and the redefining of marriage, and you mentioned something, right? And I want to ask you about this. How is this, in your view? We see this massive acceleration going on today of all of this agenda that really was planted back in the 50s and before that. But what's your best guess on what's going on here with respect to the acceleration?
Well, I think the acceleration is it's kind of, you know, I talk about, because what we're seeing right now, look at Bernie Sanders. Bernie Sanders comes out of the blue. A guy that, if you had told me a year ago or 2 years ago that he was going to have this huge following across the country of young socialists who think socialism is a good idea, I would have thought that was just a bit much. I would have thought, even then, even though I know what they're doing to the education system. But the thing that the Rees Committee, what I've been telling people on my radio program, is that what the Rees Committee uncovered was this plan that went back to the 1920s when they began rewriting our history books in the 1920s. In fact, people can go online, they can go to YouTube, and they can type in Norman Dodd, D-O-D-D. And Norman Dodd was the director of research for the Rees Committee, and he talks about all of this, how they began rewriting history to get us away from our Judeo-Christian foundation toward a more communist worldview. And it was all very deliberate, but they were going to do it systematically, one step at a time. So what I think happened is this movement, because then you have the book by John Stormer, None Dare Call It Treason, which he writes after World War II. And he's talking about how communists have infiltrated our education system back in the 1950s and 60s. And this is when the Rees Committee discovers it, but they'd already been doing this for about 30 years at that point. And now, here it is, half a century past the Rees Committee, and all of the Marxist brainwashing has really gained more and more momentum. It's like all of the seeds of deception that they have been sowing for decades are now really coming to fruition. We had a family member, this happened a few months ago, one of our family members has a son who is graduating from high school and came home one day and said to his mom that he thought socialism was a good idea for America. And his mother turned around and looked at him, his mother, who's about my age, turned around and looked at him and said, "Son, do you know that Adolf Hitler was a socialist? Did you know that?" And then they had this big debate about it and so on. He became somewhat defensive, I think. But apparently, they're not telling the kids, at least from what I'm hearing. Now, I haven't been in a high school for a while, but the kids are not really aware that socialism was Nazism, that Nazism was National Socialism. They're not being given that connection, apparently. And in fact, I've seen repeatedly attempts by the liberals to deny any sort of connection between socialism and the Nazis, which to me is just incredible, because growing up I was taught completely differently. And that's what's happening. The kids are being indoctrinated, they're being brainwashed, and it's at a point where it's just gaining more and more momentum. And so it's almost like, it's almost like walking out on your front lawn and out of nowhere all of these weeds grew up somewhere in the lawn and you're trying to, where do they come from? But all of the groundwork was laid for it over a long period of time. And so I honestly believe if there's any hope for America, if there's any hope for our country, first of all, I believe it's through the gospel and through the word of God, through the scripture. And it will take the power of God. I often refer to Psalm 119, which says, "It is time for thee, O Lord, to act, for they have made void thy law." They've made void the law of God, and we need the power of God to turn this thing around. But I think part of what needs to happen, in a practical way, would be we have to find a way to reclaim the education system. Because if the kids continue to be brainwashed with Marxism, it's just a matter of time. Within the next 10 or 20 years, you're going to have an overwhelming population of people who think that socialism and communism is a great idea. And they'll be ready to completely overturn the Constitution. That's what I see happening right now. And I think that
that's just a frightening thought, but you're right on the money, I believe.
Well, I think they recognized early on that taking down our country would not be something that could happen overnight, not something that could happen by force, because we've got too many people, we've got the Second Amendment, you've got a very strong population where there's more than 100 million people who are armed, and typically that doesn't go well for people who want to try to invade a country. They tend to shy away from that. So finding a way to subvert the country from within, that would be what you would have to do. In fact, I think there's even a speech from Abraham Lincoln where Abraham Lincoln said essentially that the only way America could fall is if we committed suicide as a country. If we somehow or other committed national suicide. And I think somebody somewhere along the way took that seriously and began to come up with a system within where that would become the mentality. Because so many people now, so many of our young people seem to have a kind of an anti-American worldview. There seems to be this hostility toward America, at least from what I sense. And maybe I'm wrong. I don't spend as much time with young people, but just seeing the sort of the disposition toward our country, that the Constitution needs to be modified or changed, or our country, we're all bigots and racists supposedly, and the Second Amendment's not a good idea, and now there's all these attacks on the First Amendment because a lot of it having to do with the homosexual agenda. We're hearing people say, well, you're no longer going to be able to hide behind the First Amendment and to protect your bigotry and this kind of thing.
I'm amazed, and we're watching this unfold right before our very eyes. The first hour before you came on, we were talking about Loretta Lynch talking to a Rhode Island senator about civil and criminal penalties about people who stand up and deny global climate change. So here we have the Department of Justice not really concerned too much about all of the ills and crimes about emails and about Benghazi and all of that, but yet you dare talk about climate change or deny it. And boy, there, you know, you're in the crosshairs of the Department of Justice, which is ridiculous, because what this amounts to is a censorship, like you said. You know, I mean, this is taking away our First Amendment rights through the weaponization of the Department of Justice. And it's just incredible as we see this play out.
Yeah. Well, and this whole climate change thing, coming back to the Georgia Guidestones. The Guidestones went up in 1980, and they're basically giving a blueprint for the politics, for the politicizing of environmentalism, and using it as an instrument for global government. When I made one of my films years ago, Megiddo, The March to Armageddon, the focus seemed to be that the need for world government, the urgent need for world government, was to prevent a nuclear holocaust. Because with nuclear bombs and so on, the world, unless the world finds out how to be unified, we could all blow ourselves up with some kind of nuclear catastrophe. They had all these movies, of course, and we all saw Planet of the Apes and this kind of thing. But that was the excuse, that to avoid nuclear holocaust, we need to have a one world order. Now, a few decades later, the excuse has shifted. There's not so much a concern for nuclear holocaust as much as climate change. And we're all in danger now because of climate change, of global warming, etc. So this is the new excuse to develop some kind of one world system, some kind of totalitarian government that can exercise oversight and, of course, more and more power over the nations of the earth to help solve the problems of so-called climate change. But that's really what, I mean, those are the elements that are contained in the Georgia Guidestones from 1980. Because everywhere you find environmentalism, there is this desire for population control, that you have to control the population somehow or other. And
exactly.
And the guy who built the Guidestones, he also published a book 5 years after the Guidestones went up. And in it, he goes into great detail about how population control is the most urgent issue facing humanity. And he's even talking about things like having one-child families, and even hints at things like what they do in China with forced abortions and that kind of thing. I don't think he comes out and actually says it, but he hints at it, you know, because how would you enforce a one-child family limit? Well, the way they do it in China is they have forced abortions, etc.
Yep.
So
yep.
It gets very, very sinister and very, very chilling at that point.
And that's what attracted me to your documentary, getting back to the Georgia Guidestones and Dark Clouds Over Elberton. Here we have in 1979, which And I find it interesting, since we were talking about education, you know, the Department of Education, you ask any young person, and they'll automatically know that the Department of Education Act was signed into law by Carter, right? Everyone knows that. No, no one knows that. You know, but okay, so Carter signed into law the Department of Education on October 17th, 1979, which is about the same period of time that the guidestones were erected. And I'm not saying that there's any connection, obviously. However, I just see this confluence of events toward the same objective, this global governance and dumbing down or indoctrinating, perhaps would be the better word, of our young people. You know, and I don't recall who the communist leader was. Lenin, Stalin, I don't know. Give me one generation and I can capture your country or change the world or whatever it was.
I think it was Stalin.
Okay. And yeah, I pretty much butchered that that statement. But not, I mean, you get the idea. That we're not looking at a series of disparate events, I don't think. I think we're looking at the true meaning from an investigative viewpoint as a conspiracy. And one thing that really got, when we were watching your film, your documentary, is the vast, I mean, this is not, one person might have been the front for the Guidestones, at least the money man or the guy that, you know, signed his name on the paper and made the contacts. But you had discovered a network behind this guy, basically. Would that be a fair statement?
Oh yeah, he openly admitted that he represented a small group of, he said, loyal Americans who wanted to help usher in an age, or the age, he says it both ways, either the age of reason or an age of reason. And in his writings he mentioned Thomas Paine and his pamphlet Common Sense. In fact, the book that R.C. Christian published was called Common Sense Renewed. And so it all sounds okay. Then you go study Paine's book, The Age of Reason. And The Age of Reason is actually an anti-Christian manifesto where Paine, 20 years after the American Revolution, approximately, publishes this book. And it's a diatribe against Christianity and the Bible. And so it's very hostile toward Christianity. And you wonder if that somehow or other was in view with R.C. Christian. Was that delivered? Because he doesn't really talk about that. He actually claimed to be a Christian. R.C. Christian did. Claimed to be a
right.
Christian. And so, but then he makes reference to this, the Age of Reason, and that he and this group, they want to usher in the Age of Reason. They want to help usher in the Age of Reason. And then, of course, as we show in the film, there are also connections to Rosicrucianism, some connections to Freemasonry, although not as strong. But Rosicrucians, those who are involved in that group, Rosicrucianism is notorious for blending Christianity and paganism, or really ancient Gnosticism, which they openly admit. If you were to go to their websites at AMORC, the Ancient Mystical Order of the Rose and Cross, they've got their headquarters out in California. In fact, I did some filming out there, and we show some of the footage from the AMORC in our Secret Mysteries series. I think in part two, Riddles and Stone, we talk about it. They develop words and phrases and so on and things like that sound very Christian. They sound very biblical, but then they have really what we would call a New Age meaning to it all. And so then you wonder, is that, you know, when R.C. Christian claimed to be a Christian, is that what he meant? That he was really a Rosicrucian? And then so making reference to Thomas Paine's The Age of Reason. Well, for me, what's interesting is seeing climate change being proclaimed in our world right now as the number one issue. President Obama is telling everybody climate change is the number one issue. You have the Pope, who worked with this climate change guy who is an atheist, this Hans Schellenhuber. Hans Schellenhuber, who worked with the Pope on his encyclical, his environmental encyclical, that he published right before he came here to America and met with President Obama. Then you had Leonardo DiCaprio, who made mention of environmentalism at the Academy Awards here recently, and he had flown to Rome, to the Vatican, to meet with the Pope to talk about this very issue. In fact, if you go look at the video of it, DiCaprio goes in, he bows and kisses the Pope's ring as he has this meeting with him. So very interesting that this is going on, and at the same time that they're proclaiming climate change is the most important issue in the world, we have what appears to be this incredible rise in anti-Christian persecution, where Christians are getting their heads cut off in different parts of the world. There seems to be a real assault on Christianity over in Europe, in places like England. If Christians speak against Islam, there have been a number of cases there, where not even speaking really, not saying anything vulgar, just confronting Islam from a Christian worldview, you can be arrested if you're a Christian over in England or Scotland or Ireland for that. There's a story of a woman who wrote a letter to a Muslim schoolmaster who was teaching Islam to little girls, and she was a Christian woman. She was very concerned. She wrote a letter and disagreed with her teaching, and the Muslim woman calls the police, has her arrested for doing this, and she ended up being sentenced to community service or something. Meanwhile, the Muslims are walking up and down the streets over there, and they're condemning England. They're saying Islam's going to rule the world, Sharia will take over, etc., etc. And when the British authorities are confronted, why do you let them do this? They say, well, we have free speech over here. So they give the Muslims the right to go around denouncing England and Christianity and whatever they want. But if Christians say anything, they can be arrested and go to jail and face prosecution. Of course, here in America, we're seeing now with the advance of the militant homosexual movement, Christians facing what we call soft persecution. I mean, it's not nearly as bad as what they're suffering over in Iraq and Syria and so on.
Yet.
But it's a growing hostility against Christianity in our country. In fact, I was reading an article not long ago. They're saying the next thing that the gays want to go after are Christian lawyers to try and find a way to block Christians from practicing law in our country unless they accept homosexuality.
Oh, how convenient. And how expeditious. Cut it off right there with the attorneys. And oh, my goodness.
They've already done this, brother, up in Canada.
I was reading a story.
I think Ken Ham might have published the story where there was a Christian university trying to get accredited with its law school, and they were denying it because they wouldn't embrace homosexuality. And they said, well,
I thought that was a joke at first. I'm sorry, I didn't believe it, but yeah.
Well, according to the story that I saw, they said the thing that was incredible about it is they said that the Christians argued that our right to religious freedom is being violated, and the judge said, yes, that's true, but it's better than allowing discrimination. At least that's where it stood. Now, things may have changed up there. I don't know.
Chris, I gotta stop you right there. We're at the top of the hour. Hard break here. Man, I'll tell you, at the epicenter, Georgia Guidestones, of course, but the ideology behind current events and the historical importance of what we've seen. Chris Pinto is our very special guest. Folks, visit his website, adullamfilms.com. We're going to be right back.
This is the Global Star Radio Network.